I'll find out what the Queensland Minister for Immigration thinks. Maroons or Maroons, Peter Dutton, good morning.
Good morning, Ray, definitely. Definitely Maroons. Kevin, and I'll tell you why, because Kevin Rudd used to call it Maroons all the time. So that should put his mind at rest.
Well, there you go. And there were other Prime Ministers that used to mispronounce other words as well, but we won't go into that. Now, we've got a very eventful day today, and I don't know how you deal with these problems as a government, let alone as a minister, and I'm talking about Nettleman, Tara Nettleman, her children, and her husband, who's a terrorist. The reports say, and obviously we don't know the full details, that the grandmother has travelled to Malaysia, to Karen Nettleton, to facilitate the return. I might also mention that the same Mrs. Nettleton facilitated the departure by travelling with the family to Asia before they made their way to the Middle East. But Tara Nettleton's one thing. The Prime Minister had already enunciated that anyone returning from that place will feel the full weight of the law. But how do you reintroduce small children into a community where everyone finds it abhorrent that a seven-year-old is given a head, a decapitated head, to display on social media? I mean, I don't know where you start and where you finish, Minister.
Well, Ray, it's a pretty clear-cut in my mind in terms of the parents, so leave that to one side.
Sure.
But in terms of the kids, if they committed an offence against Australian law, if they're of that age, which it seems in this case they're not, but just talking generically, if they're old enough to be charged here with an offence and they've committed that overseas, they've engaged in terrorism otherwise, then they'd face the Australian law like any other child or teenager would. When you're talking about infants and young kids, it's pretty hard to imagine how they can lead a normal life again. And no doubt, as any grandparent would be, this grandparent's beside herself. And the full facts of the case, I don't know. But the reality is that these parents have destroyed the lives of these kids. They could never lead a normal life. And in the end, you need to make a judgment about what support you can provide to kids. Clearly, they've demonstrated that they don't have the capacity to parent. And I think the authorities, in whatever state is the applicable state, they'll face big consequences when they get back.
See, there's other stories coming out of Syria that the boys are the youngest of a family of five children. But there were teenage girls there, 13, one of them, who's been promised or betrothed to a 30-year-old ISIS fighter. I mean, and she's still a child in the eyes of the law, in the eyes of this Australian community.
But this is what our troops are fighting. Right. I mean, this is why we're training up the army in Iraq at the moment and trying to defeat this death cult, because this is the barbaric savagery that they practice. And they're raping and pillaging their way across the Middle East. They're getting support from God knows where in terms of financing and fundraising to buy tanks and guns and the rest of it. And they need to be stopped. They need to be stopped before they spread their message any further. And the difficulty in this modern age is that they reach out to why young girls in particular would answer this call, it's beyond anybody's comprehension.
Well, I think in this young girl's case, the mother took her back there. The father's a raving lunatic. And when you're 13 and you're brought up in that environment, you're compliant. You do what your parents tell you. And if part of that is surrendering to a 30-year-old man to be his wife, you do exactly what your parents tell you, and she doesn't have a say in it, I guess.
Well, as I say, I think some of these matters be tested by authorities when they return, if they're not killed over there in the first instance.
Now, I noticed on the front page of The Australian today, Sheikh Tajuddin Al-Halali has spoken. He's warned there are potentially thousands of young Australians willing to join Islamic State. Now, the Sheikh doesn't have a lot of credibility with me and many others because of the way he carried on when he, in fact, was the Grand Mufti, including comparing women who were preyed on by men because they were scantily clad as uncovered meat. He says he warned the Howard government about the risk of this creeping radicalisation. Is there any credibility attached to whatever this bloke says?
Well, right, it's like saying, the bloke has gone out and raped somebody or murdered somebody because, you know, he's had a rough upbringing or his father wasn't employed or some other circumstance. In the end, people should be held to account for their actions, regardless of their race or creed. They answer the law equally in this country, and that's the reality. Now, there are other voices out there in the community at the moment, in the Muslim community, who are calling this savagery for what it is, and they're trying to say to young people, don't answer the call, and I think they're the people that that we should be paying attention to. And the loud voice will always, the squeaky wheel will always get the attention, no doubt. But I think most most people want to hear from the sensible voices within the Muslim community, and there are some good voices out there.
Kylie has phoned in and says, why doesn't the government shut ISIS down on the web? Stop them getting money. Well, they can't. I mean,
the they just can't, mate.
The government doesn't control the web, Kylie. It's not as if the government says, look, 2GB can't have a website or someone else can't have a website.
No, and one of the things that that we know this death cult do well is social media. They, some estimates say that they put out between 90,000 and 100,000 messages a day. Now, obviously, the US and us, the Brits, Canadians, others would be no doubt trawling around online to see what sites you could close down. But as soon as you're closing one down, another pops up and it's just impossible to close it down.
I'm interested in this so-called split in cabinet. It says 30 to 50% of Australians fighting in Syria are believed to be dual citizens, so citizens of a country in the Middle East and citizens of Australia. Now, I'm just not quite sure. Are people in cabinet arguing against the fact that we'll revoke their citizenship while they're still a citizen of another nation, or is it more about the second generational terrorists we're talking about, where we say they're stateless? I mean, where's the are there actually some people in government arguing that we shouldn't take the citizenship of dual citizens away? Are there people arguing that point?
Well, just to deal with the story first, Ray. So this story appeared online. It was a mischievous story, and it was run by one journalist. And regrettably, a number of journalists then picked the story up and run with it as if it's fact.
Right.
The fact is that there was a discussion in Cabinet, as you would expect, about how the powers would work, what safeguards are in place, who it is that would be captured by it. The Cabinet came to a decision where we supported stripping of citizenship from dual nationals, providing people wouldn't be rendered stateless, which is what we'd intended to do, and that the second part of it, in terms of taking citizenship away from somebody, making sure that they're not stateless, but in the circumstance where they were able to apply for citizenship elsewhere. So that's the second part of what the UK do. We've put that into the discussion paper, which Philip Ruddock's leading, which was our intent. So there was a discussion in Cabinet, agreement there, and I can tell you when we went to the party room on Tuesday, there was overwhelming support, and I just think members are representing their electorates. And that is that people want us to act against those that would seek to do us harm.
I think you're probably right. There's a story in the Courier Mail today about a raid by immigration and customs officials in the Lockyer Valley, west of Brisbane. 22 alleged illegal workers have been detained. Can you tell me about that and where these people come from?
Yeah, there was a series of raids across the country yesterday, and it was targeting illegal workers. A lot of farmers have great difficulty in getting workers to pick fruit. As we know, it rots on the vine or the tree or in the ground, and they are desperate to get workers. Now, the trouble is that some of these labour hire companies, it seems, are exploiting this. They're using, in some cases, illegal workers.
Now, are these the same one reported in the ABC program?
Yeah, there was a report a couple of weeks ago, and so there'll be a lot more enforcement activity because, in the end, most employers are doing the right thing, but those who are doing the wrong thing, we're going to clamp down on, and the same for the hire companies. So there were 38 in total across the country that were picked up yesterday as illegal workers, including 37 from Malaysia. So we're working through what visas they would have been on. They might have been on a student visa, for example, but they've been taken into custody because they've acted outside of their arrangements, and in some of those cases, those visas will be cancelled and people will be sent back home.
After our discussion on Tuesday, I think, about what happened at Villawood Detention Centre, and while you can't tell me about operational matters, I take it that the five people, particularly two ringleaders, have been removed from Villawood and put elsewhere. I received some correspondence yesterday, which is a cheat sheet from Serco, and obviously I can't disclose where I got it from. The two ringleaders particularly, and one of them I spoke to you about, these are people, the crimes they commit, the way they conduct themselves whilst incarcerated, both in jails or in detention at Villawood, these are very dangerous criminals. Very dangerous criminals who have threatened Serco guards, have threatened the families of Serco guards, and how it came to light that I publicised that they were on drugs, there was a social media posting, the one with the muscle-bound bikie lookalikes, celebrating the power they enjoyed inside Villawood. And it appears to me, despite the fact they're incarcerated and should be kept under strict control, they basically have the run of the place and are able to post things on social media via mobile phones, either smuggled in or given to them in some way, shape or form. Why is it taking so long, and I know it must be frustrating for everyone, including us, for the government to actually get these palookas back where they came from so they're out of our hair?
Well, the reality, Ray, is, and I can tell you I feel the same frustration on a daily basis, the reality is that some of them are caught up in the courts appealing against the decision that we've made to deport them. Now, you referred to a couple of cases. I've had a look at some of the information in relation to these people where they have been involved in activities, assaulting guards, destroying property, and I've said to you before, and as I've made very clear to the department, we will not tolerate any of it. These people have committed offences, serious offences in our country. They have been held because we've cancelled their visas and they're on a pathway to go back to where they came. Now, we go through the courts and they tie it up there for a while. That's their legal right to do so. That's fine. But what we've implemented now is that we're going to look more closely at the way in which these people are managed, because I don't want our guards assaulted. I don't want other people in the detention centres assaulted. I don't want Commonwealth property destroyed. And we are going to use Christmas Island, which is a more hardened facility, to accommodate people. We're working with the state governments where there's capacity within their jail network. If somebody's come out of jail, if they're a murderer, member of an outlaw motorcycle gang involved in extortion and assaults, they've served their jail term and we've cancelled their visa so that they return back to another country. If they've been in high security prison environments, it's pointless keeping them in some sort of a softer surround, thinking that they've improved their ways, that they're going to respect the guards and the rule of law. They're on their way out and we'll deal with that as quickly as we can. But I've got the reality of dealing with the process through the courts, which, as I say, is appropriate, but it's frustrating.
Can I just put this to you? This document I've got, a Serco document, Intel document, and I don't know if you've seen it or not, but I'd get hold of it if I were you, so that you can actually see what I've seen, the sort of people that the guards out there are dealing with. There was a really embarrassing moment when Chris Bowen was sitting exactly where you are today, and I revealed to him a number of years ago that a device had been detonated at Villawood. And he said, no, that wouldn't be right. I'd know about it if there was some sort of device, a bomb or, you know, it'd be, anyway, by the end of the program, it came to light. I was right. The minister knew nothing about it. Now, you and I have had a number of conversations on and off air about what's going on at Villawood. Would you like to be better informed by Serco? Do you think Serco try to manage things and, you know, caress things a little so that it doesn't come to the minister's attention, so that they don't look like they're not in control?
Look, Ray, I think they want to deal with it. And I think there's a combination of them wanting to deal with it and also being frustrated because the population within the detention centres is changing dramatically. Now, as we've stopped the boats, the boat people aren't going into detention. The number of people in detention is increasing because we're cancelling visas of criminals and people convicted of offences, serious offences. Now, as that population hardens, Serco and others need to recognise that they need to deal in a different way with these people who are hardened criminals. And we've had that conversation, and Serco have been given instruction in relation to this, as other providers have. We have, from the 1st of July, under the Australian Border Force, as it will then be known, instead of Customs and Border Protection, new commanders across regions who will have a much greater say in the way in which these centres are managed. And as I say, it's a zero tolerance, and we are clamping down on it in a way that hasn't been seen in years. There are raids that are taking place, that have taken place in the last couple of days in the centres to deal with these people, and we will clean it up.
Are those blokes gone now from Silver Water?
Yes, they are.
They're no longer there?
They're not there.
Are they a long way away from family members in Sydney?
They are on their way to, or they've arrived at, an island remote from here, and we will be encouraging them to return back to the place that they've come from. And
well, that might, you see, if they've gone to Christmas Island, I haven't been there, and I know from discussions I have with your predecessor, it's not a very pleasant place. That may encourage them to go back to the land of the long white cloud and other places, more idyllic than Christmas Island, if in fact that's their choice.
And we'll be happy to pay for their flights and organise the travel documents for them to go as quickly as we can, and I think some will indicate that. As I say, we're happy for everybody to abide by the rule of law, but in the end, these people have had their visas cancelled. We want them returned back to their country.
Okay, Minister, thanks as always for your time.
Thanks, Ray.
Thank you very much. That's the Immigration Minister, Peter Dutton.